Oh, bonjour, Astara.
You aren't being a proper woman, therefore you must be a witch. You must be a witch.
It's the spring equinox, which means there is a balance of light and dark. So, Risa and I thought it would be really interesting to get into the concept of spiritual bypassing in an effort to balance our light and our dark. It's a term that comes up a lot because it means a lot of different things. Number one, psychologically, it's about using your quote-unquote spirituality to pass through, not pass through, that's wrong, to avoid your dark, to not go through something, to say like, namaste and ignore, and then you've not gone through it, so you can't heal. Part of what we do as witches in healing is to really go through things, accept them, not even accept them, but like, you know, we respect our dark sides as witches. We respect darkness, and we definitely do not put it in a hierarchy above light. And that's sort of the psychological definition of spiritual bypassing, but it also really relates to appropriation and how we think we can just take the symbols of things and have them work their magic for us without actually doing the research, doing the work, doing anything.
Yeah, or having the lived experience of everything it cost to learn that sacred knowledge, you know? So I think when I'm glad you explained it because I understand it a lot better now. But I think when you talk about, you know, talk about not smudging or, you know, not burning Palo Santo or, you know, trying to be careful about not, it's not just like, don't take from another person's culture, because of course we're like learning from each other all the time. It's that you can't take the spiritual tools of someone who went through fire and hell to come back with that knowledge of healing for their people. You know, I don't know.
Well, we don't know.
We don't know.
And so we
talked. That's the main thing I know.
And that is what we're doing with this project, ultimately, is that we don't know, but we're curious.
We're just trying to read stuff, guys.
We're here, we're reading.
Ask questions.
But we were super lucky because we had Michelle, a.k.a. the Birch Trail, actually hit us up. She's a mixed indigenous woman, and she hit us up and was like, I want to come and talk to you guys. You know, she loved the first season. And thank you to all our listeners and all the people who have reached out to us.
Oh. And shout out to Birch Trail. She's like a master arts organizer as well. Mm-hmm. She's like someone who brings together the world and came with that confidence to be like, let's talk about some stuff.
Let's talk about it. So she and I got into, you know, the difference between smudging, which we do not do unless we're native, and cleansing with smoke. I didn't know this either. I even think I posted something about smudging last year because this was new. We learned to smudge from a mixed indigenous woman. And so we thought, great, you know, now we know better. And thank you, Maya Angelou. When you know better, you do better. That's all we can ask from each other. That's all we can ask from ourselves is, but don't let your ignorance be an excuse.
Yeah.
Learn. Then know, then do better. We all make mistakes, and we're all in this learning
together. Kurt Vonnegut quote in Mother Night? It's something about like he could understand all the people that were missing cogs in their minds because we all are, but he could never understand the people who had willfully filed down the pegs.
That's it.
I guess I do want to think about the original definition you gave us of spiritual bypassing, or I just want to go back to that kernel and leave it with you guys that. Sitting in the pain of something, like the pain of finding out you were wrong, the pain of shame or embarrassment, the pain of anxiety, which, hi, I'm a little bit postpartum. sitting in it and sometimes resisting the urge that pushes in on us on all sides from our culture to skip it and get back to the happy and the positive and the proactive and the doer. but to really find ways to eat and marinate in and sweat in and stew in and thank and love and thank our pain and our shadow is the root of magic. So bypassing that shit just means you're stuck on the bypass forever until you get into it.
I certainly believe that we learn more from our mistakes than we do from our successes. We learn more from being wrong than we do from being right.
Yeah.
So if you're like us and learning is kind of your ish, then get into being wrong and take responsibility for it. It ain't no crime.
And guys, please keep telling us when we're wrong. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. You know, that goes for us too, y'all.
we need you and we love you. And yeah, just to circle back to the response from people on our Instagram and...
can I just say
it's just been so lovely.
One of the... We're not big into numbers, you know, we're art people, we're not super numbers people, mm-hmm. but one of the greatest things about the statistics page of our podcast is the map. We have had listeners from like something like 50 or 60 countries, which I still can't get my head around. Who are you?
Hi.
Please, like, write to us.
Write to us, missingwitches@gmail.com. Tell us your stories. The people that have written us your stories know that we read them aloud to our loved ones and cry.
We love them. I mean, when we don't know why we're doing this, we always get an email.
Exactly.
And then we know why we're doing this. But yeah, all y'all out there, literally all across the world, my mind is blown that y'all are listening to this. So please let us know who you are.
And if there are witches that you want to tell us about, please tell us. We want to buy your books.
Mm-hmm.
We want to receive your newsletter. We do buy your books.
Yes.
It's something that we really care about.
Yeah.
We spend money on books. Tell us about your fucking badass witch aunt. Send me her biography.
Yeah. Or at very least, like, we will speak your badass aunt's name into the universe with love and honor and respect.
Yeah. A million times.
So with honor and respect, here's my conversation with Michelle the Birch Trail. We love you.
Gwe ninda Louise Michelle, Dakaranto Teleawi, Gado Jojagi Gwige. Kwe. My name's Michelle. I'm also known as the Birch Trail. I'm a mixed Indigenous woman, originally coming from Toronto, but now I'm living as an artist in Montreal.
Do you want to tell us about how you started your introduction?
Yeah, so it's in Mi'kmaq. My maternal side hails from Nova Scotia. I think it's just like important to indigenize the space that you're in.
Mm-hmm.
I probably spoke the language really bad. I've been practicing it all morning. Well, actually for a while, I won't lie, but it's just important to like recognize like the lands that you come from, the lands that you're living in, and just as Indigenous people, it's important. Like, with the rise of, like, you know, doing land acknowledgements, and people think this is something new that's just coming from reconciliation, but territorial acknowledgements have been used for hundreds of years. So it's something really important amongst Indigenous people.
And we are in Montreal right now.
Yeah.
So what's the First Nations name for Montreal?
Okay, well, there's two names that I do know of. One is Anishinaabe, and then one is Haudenosaunee. And the Haudenosaunee, which is Mohawk, if you're unaware, is Jojage. And if you look at the spelling, it definitely doesn't look like that phonetically, but how to pronounce it slowly, Jojage.
Jojage.
Yeah. And there is also, I don't know how to pronounce the Anishinaabe name, but it's... Muniyang. I will give you the spellings.
Yeah.
And I apologize to my Anishinaabe relatives for that. I should have did my research.
Well, we're learning and we're working hard to, you know, but we all are starting somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But you're quite a bit further ahead than a lot of our listeners, I think, in terms of your knowledge of the Indigenous land that we live on.
Well, even like I didn't grow up knowing this knowledge, though. It's really interesting. So it's something, obviously, I learned in my teenagehood and then more into my adult ages. But growing up, like, in school, we never learned about residential schooling. We never learned about our history before. It was just, like, the English showed up and they beat up the French. Everything's great. Now we're here. And it's just like, okay, what about everything before?
Mm-hmm. And we hear that a lot, like, it's always been this way. No.
Definitely not. And it's just, like I said, growing up Indigenous, it was just something that was, like, I've always known. This is something that I grew up with in my family. Whenever I have interactions with people, that's always the first question. Like, how long did you know you're Native? And it's like, well, like, I was born like this. I don't know. I didn't do a test, like, to find out. Like, if you identify yourself as, quote-unquote, Canadian, chances are you might have a family story somewhere. And it even happened in my family. Like, the story of the chief's daughter, and I was just like, I went and looked into my genealogy, and unfortunately, there is a lot of romanticizing, and people like to romanticize really far removed ancestors. And my family did get caught up in this. But then when I did our lineage, I was just like, but here, look, here's our whole Métis lineage that you're ignoring, that goes right up into our direct family. But a lot of that is just because we don't know. And the general public doesn't know. And unless you're faced with those issues, or you deal with Indigenous people on an everyday basis, you don't know. Mm-hmm. And some people do deal with Indigenous people and they don't know because we're white passing. And they have this specific view of how we should look. Like, based on, you know, the original paintings of, like, when the settlers came, and it's like the dark Native guy with the headdress, and your nose has to be a certain way, and your forehead has to be a certain way. And it's, even then, people don't realize that they cherry picked those people to paint and bring back to Europe to show. This is a new world. Come see these exotic people.
Exotic people, exactly.
And a really great person, actually, to follow would be Kent Monkman on this. And I don't want to call it a drag persona because he doesn't call it his drag persona, but it's Miss Chief Lady Eagle Testicle.
Miss Lady Chief?
No, Miss Chief Eagle Testicle.
Gotcha. And this is
and he's a painter. He's a multidisciplinary artist. Mm-hmm. He does a lot of those really, like, old colonial style photos with like really detailed, but then he indigitizes it. Like, there's a lot of queer imagery, there's a lot of, like, that kind of, like, reverse view of looking at the settlers in the same way that they painted us. Like, that's is definitely someone to check out. He's an amazing, he actually has a gallery in Montreal until May at the McCord Museum.
Oh, and this is going to come out at the end of March. So the McCord
Museum... It's open now. Mm-hmm. And it will be open until May.
Great. Say the name one more time so it sticks.
It's Kent Monkman, and his show is going to be at the McCord Museum.
If you live in Montreal.
The actual show is called Shame and Prejudice, or Prejudice and Shame, like the book.
Shame and Prejudice.
Shame and Prejudice.
I thought at first you said Shame and Prejudice, which also would make sense in the context of this conversation.
Totally.
So he's someone who's taking his Indigenous background and sort of playing with it in a modern way?
Yeah, well, I guess you can say modern, yes, modern, no. He's just taking, like, the lens that has often been put on Indigenous bodies and just reversing it and putting it on the settler. And he has this amazing painting that he did, and it's like heart-wrenching, because it's like you have the mounted police there with the priests, and they're pulling the children away from the mother, but you have, like, the eagles and the animals helping the other children escape. And it's really just this, like, hyper realistic, like, masterpiece. It's like, you need to check out his work.
We will definitely post this piece on our Instagram. Mm-hmm. If you follow us, we will make sure to spread this widely.
Yeah.
So I'm not familiar with the piece, so I'm excited to go check it out myself
for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, so where do we go from there?
One of the things that I know you really wanted to talk about, and I think is so important in this contemporary world that we're living in, where, you know, the witch is becoming like for better or for worse, you know, becoming a trendy thing, and people are, you know, taking the iconography mm-hmm. without understanding the sacredness or whatever. And mm-hmm. the term that you use when we talked before is spiritual bypassing.
Yeah.
So let's dive into that. I mean, I know you are like a pagan,
mm-hmm.
But you're also an Indigenous woman. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times the pagan community has been pretty sick about taking. So yeah, let's dive into that. I know you have thoughts.
I definitely do. And it's just like, to give a little backstory, so I grew up Indigenous, but I call it pan-Indigenous just because culture was removed. My family is a victim of the 60s scoop, residential school system.
And like you were talking about before, how some people just don't know, and it's not a question of like, oh, they just don't know. Like, they're erasure. Like, carry on.
And people don't realize. They're like, oh, so long ago. But no, it's our grandparents. It's mm-hmm. our parents. It's still happening today. It's children are being removed astronomical amount, and they're not being put back into Indigenous families. And it's really for minor issues that, in all honesty, if you were a white heterosexual family with a child and that was your situation, your child would not be taken away.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you're like, you know, forced to live in a certain situation, and then you have your children taken away from you because of that situation that you've been forced into a lot of times. Poverty
and just, you know, not understanding that it's families dealing with the trauma they're dealing with. My aunt spent a lot of time in and out of the foster care system. I do know them, though. Like, they are part of our family now. They weren't permanently removed, thankfully.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just like a lot of fear like that. And you see the trauma just kind of trickle down, and you see it in just mannerisms through your family, through your parents. And then even like myself, like my cupboard is stock full of cans just in case, you know, like my go-to comfort foods are like Spam and Katie, but like, I want to go there, but
like insecurity, you're always like ready. Like,
I'm always prepared for the worst, mm-hmm. and I lost my train of thought.
We were talking about your backstory.
Yeah. So growing up, it's just I grew up with, like I said, a pan-Indigenous teachings. We knew who we were, but we grew up in an urban center, so our connection to it was not very strong. You know, my parents were working two jobs to support us. My mom had me when she was 17. My parents are still together, which is amazing, but they worked their asses off to support us. So it's like, other than the odd summer powwow, there wasn't much of a strong connection there. And I really, really resonated with paganism. And now I realize a lot of it's just like from blood memory and trying to make those connections, just mm-hmm. because there's a lot of similarities.
Connection to the earth being a
exactly.
major one.
Yeah. Connection to the earth, connection with the animals, you know, you have the web of interconnectedness. And in Mi'kmaq language, that's like, you know, M'sit Nokuma, which is like, we are all connected.
Can you say that again just for my ears?
M'sit Nokuma. But it's but and even in Wiccan, like the web of weird, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. Like that whole web of interconnectedness. But growing up and learning more, then I realized, oh, it's just kind of been cherry picked from different ancestral teachings. And like, even when I listened to your guys' first podcast with Pixie Coleman, and mm-hmm. it's just like, there is another prime example of spiritual people cherry picking and taking those teachings and stepping on the backs of minority to do so.
Mm-hmm.
But it was something that I connected to. Like, growing up, I was supported. My mom supported me. There was a Wiccan priestess who lived down the street from us, and she's just like, if you ever need, you can go talk to her. She bought me my first tarot deck. It's, Yeah, so I've been generally supported. I've never been in the broom closet. And I just found that, like, navigating the pagan world when topics of genealogy come up, because people are curious, people are gonna always ask, and then they're gonna scrutinize when they're like, oh, but you don't look how I imagine you to look. And then just romanticizing things like, oh, like the whole wave in shamanism, and you have all these like white spiritual people calling themselves shamanistic healers, and it's just, if you're to actually find, you know, a medicine man, he's not going to go around calling himself a shaman.
Mm-hmm. And Annie Lamoureux, who was on season one, said the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I was like, are you a shaman? And she was like,
no.
If somebody says yes, then
that terminology is just not really used either. Like, the terminology I know is as like a medicine woman or man or a medicine person. Mm-hmm. And then,
that person in the community.
Exactly.
That people go to, yeah.
And people, like, you won't find out that person. Like you're not going to be like, where's the shaman? Bring me to the healer.
Unless you are an outsider who's coming and looking for a quick, easy fix that they can purchase, right?
Well, yeah, but there's always that.
Yeah, there's always
that, and that goes back to the spiritual bypassing. Like, ooh. So the actual definition of spiritual bypassing, and ironically, it was coined by an American guy in the 80s who is a Buddhist teacher. And it's the tendency to use spiritual ideas and practices to sidestep or avoid facing unresolved emotional issues, psychological wounds, and undevelopmental tasks.
Mm-hmm.
Unfinished developmental tasks.
Yeah. Basically skipping going through the ugly stuff and just...
Exactly.
Saying,
But a lot of this goes in hand with appropriation. Mm-hmm. A lot of it goes hand in hand with toxic positivity.
Let's talk about toxic positivity, because that's not a phrase that you hear very often, but honestly, I mean, vibrations are nothing. Good vibes only, love and light. No, like some, we as human beings should be required to experience the full range of human emotion, mm-hmm. especially if we're trying to get through something dark.
Exactly. And love and light is great. Positive thinking is wonderful. It will help take you out of a very dark place. But if you can't sit with your anger, and if you can't sit with your shadow side, okay, so what kind of witchcraft are you doing, is my question.
What kind of witchcraft
are you doing?
What kind of witchcraft are you doing?
Well,
honestly,
no,
let's take a second and ask yourself, what kind of witchcraft are you doing? And not in a judgmental way, mm-hmm. but like, really, let's think about what we're doing.
Like, it goes all into, like, when you're doing a spell and you're picking out your herbs, what kind of relations do you have to those plants? Do you know what they do? Do you know what their properties are? Have you grown it? Or do you go through a list and then just throw a dump pile of herbs in a fire and say, woo, go, money spell. Like,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
No, like, it's really like developing those plant relations and developing like your knowledge, like your intent. And growing that intent just makes your spell work stronger.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are just taking from a list of things, like, I know these are good for this certain spell, and dumping in a fire and just like hoping for the best, there's not much intention in there.
Right.
And a lot of that comes, you know, like with the use of sage,
mm-hmm.
and everyone
Let's
saying
talk
smudging
sage.
And
Let's
like
talk sage. since we're here because this is like a problem. Like, sage is white sage is on the endangered list in California right now. I think, I mean, I'll cut this out if I'm completely off base. I'll Google
it's at
it.
Risk, and it grows in California and along the coastlines, and white sage is medicine for the indigenous peoples of that area.
Mm-hmm.
And we have our own local sage too. Wild sage does grow up here, but it's not the white sage. It's not the giant beautiful smudge sticks that, mm-hmm. like, you know, with the smudge. But it's the original custodians of that land and the original people to use that medicine don't even have access to it. And indigenous peoples who use it here all across Turtle Island. They don't have access to those medicines because of, like, let's say, over harvesting. Abalone shells, they're at risk too. They are way over harvested as well. And it really goes against the idea of take what you need. Because now we have this mass consumerism and mass need that people absolutely want this medicine.
Yeah, we have definitely reframed the idea of need.
Exactly.
Oh, I need that jacket. I need that white sage.
And then you just, like, all I ask is, like, you try to think, what is your connection to that herb? What is your ancestral connection? And for me, my craft is a lot about ancestral connection. And that includes both my white side, my settler side, which is Irish Scots, and then, of course, my Indigenous side as well. And I find a lot of the appropriation and a lot of the cherry picking from Indigenous cultures is like a lack of knowledge. Like, I always ask, you always talk to a white person and they're just like, I'm 50 shades of mayonnaise and I'm like, I don't have any culture. And it's just like, well, no, you have so many beautiful cultures all across Europe that have unfortunately been trampled on by Christianity as well. That you have such beautiful ancestral teachings that you can go reclaim.
Mm-hmm. And you know, a girlfriend of mine and I were talking once, and she was saying, like, you know, as a Canadian, that she doesn't have this, like, wonderful. And I was like, blueberry pancakes. Like, blueberry pancakes, her grandmother would make them, and they would pick the blueberries from the, you know, just because we don't see it as exotic doesn't mean that it's not beautiful and not part of your ancestry. Like, blueberry pancakes can be just as sacred as
course. And you're posting about, like, that magical cooking, and it's just like, cooking is such a huge part of that too. Like, that's how you feed yourself, and it's like going out and picking your medicine when you grow it is an amazing way to connect with those plants. It's an amazing way to not exploit. Like,
yes, growing your own. I mean, you know, here at Missing Witches, we are very DIY. We support artisans, and we'll get into your art that you sell in a minute. But when you support artisans, but also if you can make it yourself or grow it yourself, that's the ideal as far as I'm concerned. And I wish, you know, I moved from an apartment to the woods, and I wish that I had known how easy it is to have plants, you know, and edible plants. You know, I had roommates who had a lot of ferns and whatever, and I was terrible at taking care of them. But, like, having something and pulling it out of the dirt and putting it into your mouth is one of the most amazing things.
And
that
it tastes,
like,
so good.
It tastes so good. And it's, like, spiritually fulfilling.
You taste the happiness.
Like, I planted this, I grew it, and now I'm eating it. And I'm just going to pull it straight out of that dirt and put it right into my mouth. And you can do that.
Mm.
You can do that. Yeah. Anybody can do that. And it doesn't mean you have to, you know, go to Walmart and get your white sage.
Oh, no. I can... Luckily, we do have there are ethical sources to get sage. Mm-hmm. There's ways where if you really want to use sage, if you really connect with that plant, I'm not saying in all of this, I'm not saying don't have an appreciation for another culture. I'm just, turn your appropriation into appreciation.
Excuse me. Yeah, my sort, like, of go-to phrasing is that appropriation to me is when someone takes something sacred and treats it as if it's not sacred.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me is the bottom line. You know, like, we'll probably get into this with many of our guests, but if you're a white Rastafari and that's, like, you know, and it is sacred to you, and you understand.
Not just smoking a joint on your couch on weekends.
With, like, your Bob Marley, you know, legend. You know, have all his records, just that one compilation. And, you know, and so that's taking something sacred and rendering it unsacred. If you recognize the sacredness of what you're doing, and part of what you're talking about, not just going and taking the easy road and going, okay, I'm going to just get some sage from whatever monstrous.
And I'm
going to
read a couple of, like, websites.
Or,
like,
not even. You know, I saw this post on Instagram and it looked great, so I thought. But part of treating something as sacred is to go and do your research and find it from someone that is also treating it as sacred.
Exactly. Or just go straight to the source. Like, we talk about, you know, bypassing and just wanting to learn quickly and not do the actual path. Like, I guess the best way that I know this is I'm on a Reiki path right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm learning with the Newtopia Holistic Center, and my Reiki master, her name's Jen. She's an amazing woman as well, and a crystal healer who does ethically source her crystals.
that's another thing, you know, yeah. Just like if you think that you're going to get some good vibes from something that's been ripped from the earth by
yes.
a person who was not getting paid to do this labor and then is shipped, you know, I feel like some of the good vibes are going to be lost in the
yeah.
process, right?
It was definitely.
Yeah.
And like... doing the Reiki path, though, it's gonna take me 3 years basically to get to the level where I want to be. And I see so many courses are like, do Reiki online and we'll attune you, and it's like that wasn't the original learning system that was intended. Like, it is a shared healing modality.
Yeah.
Modality. Mm-hmm. It is a shared healing modality. But it's a certain teacher-student path. You learn certain symbols, and then you do your case studies, and then you graduate into the next level, so you get to get more symbols, like so on and so forth. And then you, on the other side, you have spiritual bypassing, where it's like, you can do this course online. Google it, and you can find all the symbols.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not respecting that. It's not respecting that... how it is supposed to be taught, how it was originally supposed to be taught, like the yogic path. Everyone calling themselves a yogi, meanwhile they don't really know what the actual definition of a yogi is.
Mm-hmm. And they've never heard of Ayurveda.
Exactly.
And, you know, that kind of thing, yeah.
And it's just... like, we talk a lot about, like, appropriation in that sense, and it's like, my question is like... if you are interested in these things, why wouldn't you seek out teachers with that ancestral teaching, with that, and a lot of the marginalized community we talk about, like, rather than just sharing these posts, let's see some reparations. This is a wonderful way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Seek out an Indian yoga teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Seek out an indigenous person if you wish to experience smudging, anything like that. But just... keep in mind that you're a guest and you're not there to change. You're there to listen. But
and
all...
you're certainly not there to pick up a skill in an hour that you can go and sell for trade.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And you also have to understand, too, like, especially within the indigenous community, and people don't realize that ceremonies were banned up until the 50s.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And people don't understand that within that terminology, that also includes making crafts. That
mm-hmm.
also includes making any native crafts,
mm-hmm.
anything like that. All of that was banned up until the 50s.
And again, this is an important thing for settlers, for white people to understand,
mm-hmm.
is that if you're casually doing something that someone of a different ethnicity was killed for doing in public, and you're, again, you're not treating it with that kind of gravitas, then I see that as a problem,
mm-hmm.
again.
And just, like, I do know people that have come up to me and just as a means of trying to, like, relate. Like, I grew up as a hippie near, like, a reserve, and I got to experience the ceremonies and so on and so forth. And it's, like, you don't realize that, like, Indigenous people are barred access to their ceremonies. Some of them are, like, our two-spirit, our trans,
mm-hmm.
non-binary folk, urban natives. There are people that have been removed, people through the foster care system. There are different bars that we don't have access even up until this day. Some people have never gone to their ceremony, or they don't feel welcome. And it's because of all this, like, trauma and this hurt and understanding that. So when you have someone who, I guess, is bypassing, and I went to the ceremony, I got my XYZ native name. It's hurtful. It's hurtful.
Mm-hmm.
And it will always bring up that trauma that it's like, not even I had access to it. So on.
Yeah.
So that's why be mindful when you turn appropriation into appreciation. Mm-hmm. Just being like, well, then again, if you're turning appropriation into appreciation, I think you would already know these things.
Yeah.
And I have a rule. Like, when you don't know, you don't know. There's no harm. And we live in, like, a call out, a very calling out, mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. Society right now, especially online. Yes. And I don't necessarily agree with it all the time. It's always best to call in before you call out.
Ooh, say that again for the people in the back.
To call in before you call out.
Yeah.
And I have a really, really sad story about that.
Well, let's hear it.
But, so in our, it has nothing to do with witchcraft.
That's fine.
It was this poor, it was an animal, quote unquote, animal abuse story. It ended up getting published in one of our local papers. I believe it was CBC.
Uh-huh.
And a dog died in a car. And no context, no anything. This guy, the owner of the dog, in the end ended up committing suicide. And people were harassing him. They were calling him out online, but they didn't realize he was an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. He had a lot of depression problems, or he suffered from depression. And that he actually sent his dog to someone to be watched for the day because he knew he was out of it.
Mm-hmm.
That person figured he would find the dog in the car, which he never did until a few days later. So now you have both of them that have now passed on, and what was achieved? What was really achieved there?
Mm-hmm.
And you have in the example, there are a few stores on Instagram, anywhere that are appropriating, and they don't, some of them don't realize it. Some of them are just like, the dream catcher is really pretty. Here's mm-hmm. a pretty design.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you call in. You send it a private message. Hey, I'm so-and-so from such-and-such nation. Do you realize that this is hurtful and this, you know, you're appropriating?
Mm-hmm.
And then that puts it in their court. If they're just going to block you and be like that, like certain mm-hmm. spiritual
yeah.
That spirit, that Instagram account.
If you want to, I don't know.
That Audrey Kitchen, the girl. I don't know if the listeners follow her, but.
let's just say there are lots of examples of this. And yeah. this one in particular, where this woman was calling herself like an energy healer and was just buying her stuff
from AliExpress.
And then reselling it as a handmade item.
Exactly.
And this is just one example of a lot of.
And she has. And you have people accusing you of something, and then you go run and hide.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
you block them, and you don't answer to it. So, in that point in time, is appropriate to call out.
Yeah.
That's when you call out, because that person is avoiding.
Yeah. But we ideally will leave room open to make a mistake. I would love to make Missing Witches if we're creating a space here, a space where you can make an honest mistake,
mm-hmm.
where you can ask an honest question that might be scary to ask.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're coming at it respectfully and you can tell the difference, and know, you give this person the opportunity, hey, I'm from this nation, and I don't know if you know this, but this, and then they block you, or
often.
You know, I took a one day online course, and so then you can say, okay, you don't get it. Mm. Now you're canceled.
Exactly.
But I prefer to give people the opportunity,
because sometimes they don't know. And you want to know what chances are? If you are a witch identifying person, you have appropriated and you have bypassed at some point in time. We all have. I have.
Mm-hmm.
I was a preteen. I didn't know what I was doing. Like,
for sure. I mean, especially when I was growing, we didn't have the internet yet. Yes,
no, children, not at all.
Like I went to high school in the early 90s, mid 90s. So.
And eat the whole wall. And the books on witchcraft that you'd find in the 90s and the 80s.
Ooh, pretty. Like I remember going to the library, and it was like, you know, medieval witch hunt. And so I know a lot about the European medieval witch hunt, because those were the books, again, that were
the very first, accessible. Actually, I have the very first book I ever bought on witchcraft when I was 11 or 12.
Oh,
and I was super overzealous. I don't know what I was... Actually, now, as an adult witch, it's really interesting. And it's called The Witch's Magical Handbook.
By
Gavin Frost and Yvonne Frost. And they are the founders of the Church and School of Wicca.
Mm-hmm.
And this book is very... I want to say scientific. Because it's very,
that.
Like...
Great.
Energy directing. This is a poppet. You're using it to, like, very technical.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, 11-year-old me is like, whoa. Like, there's a lot of stuff I don't understand.
Mm-hmm. And you just kind of dive in. Because that's what we do. We get excited and we want to dive into this kind of thing. And the more, ideally, the more you get into it and the more you learn, the better you try to do.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, exactly. Like, in life in general, magic, whatever, the better we can do. I mean, just try.
Mm-hmm.
Just try. I mean, sometimes you're going to have to get a disposable cup, and that's okay. David Suzuki's going to forgive you. Just try.
Just a paper cup.
Yeah, paper cup, as often as you can avoid it, you know? But please, like, don't beat yourself up. Just try to do better.
Mm-hmm.
We're not sitting here telling you should feel shitty about anything that you've done, but, like...
And even now, like, Llewellyn Books published a book on smudging rituals by a British woman. Mm. Yep. And that's recent. That's just this year. And then she posted it, and then she got called out.
Yeah.
And she... I don't know if they're pulling the book. I haven't updated with that again. But she was just like, I'm heartbroken. I tried to do good.
Mm-hmm. And that's understandable, too, you know, but...
But a lot of it's deflecting, too. It's like, okay, now make the change.
Uh-huh.
Well, I'll have to check to see if that thing is published
or not. But we know that this happened with the witch kit that Sephora was selling last year, and there was an uproar, and that was eventually pulled.
But now you find, like, mascaras and eyeshadows based off the Zodiac, and, like, you can get anything.
And I think that's the thing. And another place where spiritual bypassing, for me anyway, in a sort of different definition of spiritual bypassing, is that you want the objects, you want the accoutrements, you want the pentagram necklace, but you don't actually want to take your time. And
you want good vibes.
There's another term called virtue signaling.
Yes.
You want everyone to know that you're cool and you're spiritual and you're this and you're that. So you get your little moon phase t-shirt or whatever it is. Yes. And then everybody knows how cool and, you know, magical you are. But you don't actually spend any time with the moon.
No.
I mean, I don't know.
I'm all for, like, witch aesthetic.
Don't get me wrong. Witchy aesthetic forever.
Witchy aesthetic forever. And it's like, in your craft, you don't have to be practicing all the time. You can be a light believer.
Mm.
But depending on what objects you're carrying, you can't just... when someone is going to question you, you have to be prepared. Like...
And this is the thing that I think is at the root of the root of the root, is that a lot of people, when they are questioned, get defensive, or again, they'll block you, or...
And that's why calling in, calling in comes in, and rather than going out and attacking, like, you did this, you don't know what you're doing, you're crazy, like... That's accusing. Of course, someone is going to go hide away, like, oh, I'm being attacked by some person online or in person or wherever you are. And that is a normal human reaction to someone coming at you.
And again, sometimes this call-out culture is not what we're talking about, where you say, hey, you know, maybe you made a mistake here. But it's like, you should go kill yourself, for example, which is not something that anybody needs to respond to. And if somebody is coming at you abusively, obviously, block, block, block away. That is not the same as it's not the same as bypassing, as far as I'm concerned. If someone is being abusive to you, then to just...
There was a good example of that with a shop called the Spunky Squaw. And Squaw is a derogatory name.
Mm-hmm.
And this woman in the States had a shop, and she was appropriating a bunch of stuff off the Navajo Nation. She was using a lot of their imagery, and people tried to call her in. And then we got blocked. And then people tried to call her out, and then they start, then her followers start coming and just shooting the most ignorant stuff, mm-hmm. and then the death threats, and it's just like, it is intense. Fast forward to a few months later, and I'm pretty sure I know that there is a lawsuit, potential lawsuit at some point. Mm-hmm. She changed the name in the end, mm-hmm. but no, nothing was learned. Nothing was learned. No. It was just, oh, okay, well, I realize it's wrong after...
After I fought you in court.
I don't even know if I went to court. Yeah. I knew that there was a lawsuit building. But no, it's just like nothing learned. Like, oh, I realize it's wrong. It sucks. Like, I want this. I'll just change the name.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's just so many examples of that. And it is a lack of education. It is lack of not knowing what's beyond your bubble.
And quite honestly, I mean, a lot of Indigenous people aren't necessarily going to have the resources that the white people in the same environment are going to have. So sure, I can set up my business like this because I have all those resources, but the person who's been doing this for life and, you know, so on and so forth, doesn't have the resources to set up a business immediately. So you can say, well, if why don't they just go and do their own business? And it's not that easy, right?
And then the misconception that, you know, we just get all this tax money and like all this free stuff and... Let's keep in mind, no. I will not expand because I cannot talk on the experience of someone who would be more marginalized presenting than me. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying like I had a difficult growing up. It is an interesting learning experience. It is hard a bit, mm-hmm. growing up mixed, and but it definitely is not the same experience as someone who is more marginally presenting, someone who grew up on reserve.
Sure.
And
but you're mixed, so you've sort of taken your privileged side, let's say, mm-hmm. and used it to the advantage of your Indigenous side. So let's talk a little bit about your craft. I know like a lot of your projects, you give a large portion of your proceeds to
that was for my 41 days project. Days, yes.
Yeah. And but some of your other stuff, like a lot of your projects are in,
I do a lot of fundraising.
Yes.
Actually my next project, which I hope will be launched by the time this episode is out, mm-hmm. it already got pushed back from Valentine's Day, but I'm doing I partnered up with a Mohawk artist, and we're going to be doing a shirt campaign for just land acknowledgement. It's going to say unceded, Jajage unceded, mm-hmm. which means Montreal unceded. And on the back, I didn't learn how to pronounce it before mm-hmm. for this episode, but it's going to say residents of Jajage mm-hmm. in Haudenosaunee.
Uh-huh.
And the money is, the entire project is all Indigenous made. All the money raised is either going towards paying for the people involved in the project, and the entire amount will be donated to a local charity.
Yeah.
I don't feel this is something that this is not something that I should be making money off of, considering that I'm not a custodian of this land. mm-hmm. The recognized custodians are the Mohawk, are the Mohawk Nation, although the Anishinaabe peoples did go through this land as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's actually a campaign that I'm coming out with. My previous campaign, 41 Days of Healing, was just a just like a combination of all of my artistic disciplines. It was a portrait series. I made one necklace a day over 41 days as a pilgrimage. So everything was done in ceremony.
Yeah, it's like a very ceremonial, religious, like, process for each pieces.
Yeah, exactly. And each one is it is inspired off of deconstructed medicine bags. So it's just like a different way of wearing your medicine. And I shared a lot of experiences I had growing up, and a lot of the things that people have said to me, and a lot of the things that my own family members have said to me, because a lot of mixed kids do deal with racism within their own families, and just like that kind of like lateral violence is that's why I say it's like it's very interesting growing up mixed. Like my maternal side and my paternal side come from two very different worlds, and the combining of the two is, you get a lot of prejudice like within your own family. That's like what I'm trying to say. In the actual project, like I guess, like I shared a conversation that I had with one of my direct family, not direct, because direct to your mom and dad. Like I consider them like
mm-hmm. a family member.
A family member.
A non-distant family member.
A non-distant yeah. family member. Someone who was close around me. And she's just looking at me like, you got dirt on you. And I'm like, I don't have dirt on me. Like, this is what happens when I go outside in the summer. Mm-hmm. And it's just the comments like, oh, if you tan too much, you're going to look like your mother. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, whoa. That kind of like preconception that, you know, light is beautiful. Mm-hmm. Why, like, you know, dark hair isn't beautiful, and like a lot of these like polarized opinions just kind of like pull you all over the place, and it pulls you in different political spectrums and different like. It's very confusing.
Yeah. Identity is confusing for everybody, but mm-hmm. some people have a little easier time because things are more clear.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think, the problem is when we decide to put all of these wonderful different things and put them into hierarchies, which mm-hmm. is, like, what white capitalist religious patriarchy does.
Exactly.
You know, this is better than this, and this is better than this, so you should feel that.
And I've grown up in conservative circles. When I was a young teen, and just like that's where it brings me to today, and just like understanding where that privilege lies, and using the privilege that I have to try to lift up and showcase those who have been marginalized within my own family, within everywhere.
But specifically related to your own ancestry.
Exactly. Specifically related to my own ancestry. And this is something I really stepped into my 20s. And I really felt alone. Like, I heard someone tell me that their grandmother referred to mixed kids as ghost walkers. Because we can walk between both worlds. But we don't really belong to both worlds. We don't really stay in both worlds. Like, a lot of us feel isolated, and
despite having access to both places,
and then just like this whole world opened up, like, and especially, you know, coming presenting my work more publicly as well. I'm just finding all these other great makers who are also mixed, and just a lot of it is the same stories, and we've all been through the same things, and we all hear the same things, and then you become not so alone.
Not so alone is good.
So I really like blend a lot of that into my work. A lot of my work is my artistic endeavors, which is something that I've been doing forever. The Birch Trail, which is what I do now, was really inspired off of, I would save fallen leaves and I put them in wax. Or I would just draw on birch bark and keep those. And like when you see the leaves trapped in the ice, that's when I connected the two, because I used to be an illustrator and a painter, and I would use resin to coat my paintings with and make copies and make it into jewelry and stuff. And then it dawned, like, I can combine the two. This is amazing. So it's just a different way to, like, carry your medicine with you. It's just bringing it in, like, I don't want to say contemporary, and I hate this whole, like, traditional versus, like, what's, like, new native mm-hmm. art. It's, like, mm-hmm. if it's made by a native person, it is native art.
So, since we're on the subject...
Yes.
Do you think that if that woman had titled her book Cleansing with Smoke, that it would have made a difference?
Just cleansing rituals would have been different.
Sure.
Because smudging is a very specific ceremony. And the word smudge just has been appropriated and taken to, okay, I burn this thing, and then now the energy is clear in my house. Mm-hmm. When really you're cleansing. And you want to know what? Growing up and reading a lot of the old, like, witch books and that kind of stuff, I didn't see smudging that often. Mm. This is something that's, like, really come out recently, at least in my awareness. And it's just, like, really defining the two. Like, cleansing. You're cleansing something. You're cleaning it of its energy. You're cleaning a space.
And we could do that with water moonlight or smoke or wind.
And any kind of smoke, you can do it with incense, you can do it with herbs. It doesn't have to be sage. It doesn't have to be Palo Santo.
It doesn't have to be white sage.
It doesn't have to be white sage. If it is white sage, please buy it from an indigenous source.
And, Michelle is going to give us a list. We won't sit here and read it out for you now.
Oh, no.
Michelle's going to give us a list, a ton of resources where you can get stuff. Artisans, artists, craftspeople, and ethical places where you can support these people and not feel guilty while you're trying to make yourself feel more magical. I mean, I don't know. That doesn't make sense
to me. That was a good one, though.
If you have to feel bad about your magical tools and where they came from, then you should resource your resources.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And so, just seek out your own ancestral teachings. Seek out, what did your ancestors use? Mm-hmm. And you might be surprised at how well you connect to that. You might be very surprised.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I consider myself sort of like, I believe in that oneness. So to me, I mean, and there will be people who would disagree with me, but to me, like Elegba and Hecate, they're both keepers of the crossroads. To me, there's not that much difference because I in the great oneness of everything,
Well, no, they're archetypes for a reason.
Yeah. And I don't think that the great oneness sees much difference between your skin color or your genitals or your where you were born.
No.
Or, you know, the great consciousness doesn't see us that way. So I strive to do that. But again, you have to be practical. We live in the world. We don't live in like a, well, I mean, we live in a spiritual realm. Okay, we do, but not exclusively, right? So we have to be practical. We have to think about where our tools are coming from if we want them to be successful, right?
Yeah, especially with mass consumerism, especially with this huge rise of capitalism. And, you know, we're not going to get rid of it tomorrow. It's not just going to all crumble down. Like, I realize that
if any of our listeners have any tips on how we can tumble capitalism in one day, one online course, how to topple capitalism.
I've got a studio we can plan in.
So we'll work together to do this. So again, like, do you have any last thoughts before we wrap it up? We've covered a lot of ground here, and it's more vast and ancient than either of us.
I feel like we could not cover everything.
No, we've only scratched the surface because there is a universe of magic.
Just to bring it back to the spiritual bypassing, because a lot of people are looking for fast, quick ways to, you know, reach the fifth dimension. Mm-hmm. Or if you believe in that, like, let's...
I believe in the disco act, the fifth dimension. They're amazing.
I love a disco. Yeah. Just like a guru should empower you to find your own inner guru, and a healer should empower you to do your own healing. Mm-hmm. And they shouldn't be looking to be idolized. They should not be put up on a pedestal. And don't just go to one teaching. You gotta do the groundwork. You gotta, like, be committed. It's not like McDonald's crystal healer. I'm not gonna say her name again.
I mean, if you think of it as therapy, you're not gonna go to one therapy session and
no, of course not,
baggage unpacked and fixed. Like, it doesn't work like that.
Different therapists are gonna help out with different things, and you gotta find what fits you. But you also have to be willing to do the work, and you also have to be willing to answer those questions that you might get when you go around saying, I'm a shaman.
And listen, kids, if your belief system doesn't hold up to being challenged, then you need to challenge your belief system even more. You know, you should want people to challenge you, because that's only going to strengthen your resolve if you are in a position where you have to defend your beliefs. Mm-hmm. It's only going to strengthen you unless somebody asks you a question and it all falls apart. Yeah, and especially then you should be hoping that somebody asks you that question. Yeah.
And it's not just like all good vibes, and this toxic positivity often ignores marginalized bodies.
Yes.
And it's just like saying, you thought it. Those are your vibes. You totally attracted it. And I'm like, yes, Indigenous people attracted genocide.
Yeah.
Definitely, sure.
Their vibes weren't high frequency.
Enough. I was not on 5D. Let me come back to Earth.
Okay, so what's the gospel according to Michelle, the Birch Trail? Give us one last
Of
love and light to pass on to our listeners.
Oh my gosh. Who said this? Do no harm but take no shit.
Do no harm but take no shit. I'm willing to end on
and
that.
And I don't know that I did not come up with that. Someone else said this, but
some wonderful witch out there, if you know who it was, hit us up. Hmm? We love you. Thanks for listening.
No, thank you. We'll always. Down in a big school.